Welcome to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. I'm John, Father John Deere, and today I'm speaking with my friend, Reverend Matthew Fox. This podcast is a project of www.beatitudecenter.org, where you can find many other podcasts and regular Zoom programs on the nonviolence of Jesus and practicing nonviolence and working for a more just, more peaceful, more nonviolent world. So I always like to begin with a little prayer, so I invite everyone listening to wherever you are just to stop and take a deep breath and just to relax and recenter yourself and notice how you're feeling as we begin. And I invite you again into the presence of the God of peace who loves you infinitely and personally. And let's welcome the nonviolent Jesus here with us. Just take a moment to ask for whatever grace you need to follow the nonviolent Jesus more faithfully and to do the will of the God of peace. God of peace, thank you for all the many blessings of life and love and peace that you give us. Be with us now as we reflect together on your call to follow the nonviolent Jesus. Bless us, inspire us, disarm us, strengthen us, and send us out to do your will and live out your gospel and do our part to help end poverty, war, racism and greed, injustice, nuclear weapons, environmental destruction, that we might be your beatitude people, your holy peacemakers who welcome your reign of universal love, nonviolence, and peace on earth. In Jesus' name, amen. It's a great pleasure to welcome my friend Matthew Fox, a world-renowned theologian, Episcopal priest, and an activist for justice and creation. Matthew's written 37 books that have been translated into other languages over 70 times, among them all these great bestsellers like Original Blessing, The Coming of the Cosmic Christ, A Spirituality Named Compassion, The Reinvention of Work, The Hidden Spirituality of Men, and Christian Mystics and the Pope's War. He has contributed much to the rediscovery of Hildegard of Bingen, Meister Eckhart, and Thomas Aquinas. He holds a doctorate in history and the theology of spirituality from the Institut Catholique de Paris. He's the founder of the University of Creation Spirituality in California and conducts workshops every year. His latest book is Naming the Unnameable, 89 Wonderful and Useful Names for God. He's currently a visiting scholar at the Academy of the Love of Learning in Santa Fe and resides in Vallejo, California. Welcome, Matthew Fox, to the Nonviolent Jesus Podcast. Thanks for giving me a little time.
Thank you, John. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's jump right into the crisis we're all facing here at home with the Trump administration, dismantling the government and democracy, attacking the Constitution, and moving us into authoritarianism and fascism and really white supremacy. And many, many church people, Christians here in the United States, going right along with this MAGA movement and moving deeper into what? Christian nationalism and, as I say, white supremacy. And you've written recently a lot about Trump and MAGA. So tell us what you think about this situation, this crisis, from your perspective, and what is the Christian response? I know that's a big question, but people want to hear what you have to say, Matthew.
Well, it's a reality. We're in the middle of a coup, and American democracy, as imperfect as it is being hijacked in the name of authoritarianism and billionaires and the rule of the few. A government by the few, for the few, and of the few. And I wrote about this. Obviously, you saw it coming. I saw it coming. But last June, I was teaching in Orvieto, California, Italy. Orvieto, Italy. I was teaching a week class on Thomas Aquinas because it was the 800th anniversary of his birth. And he taught in Orvieto. And my Italian friend, he took me to the cathedral there, which is a very beautiful cathedral. Some people call it the most beautiful cathedral in Europe. And he took me to this one chapel within it, a big chapel, He didn't say anything. He put me in front of this fresco, giant fresco, and I just stared at it. And I said out loud, first word I said was, "It feels like Donald Trump." And then I looked at the title. The title was The Antichrist, Preaching and Deeds of the Antichrist. So I went home and wrote a book called Trump and the MAGA Movement as Antichrist. I had to rush it and get it out fast before the election. But it contains a lot of language, I think, and understanding of what's really going on, because Antichrist is an archetype for evil. And what's going on is evil. It's not just different politics. And the painting was done by Luca Signorelli in 1501, the very beginning of the 16th century. It contains, I think, 176 characters in it, including there are these ninja-like young people running around the black, all dressed in black. And to me, they remind me of Elon Musk's fellows who are invading Social Security, everything, stealing our addresses and Social Security number and everything. And over the years, they've been called a Ku Klux Klan in black and so forth. So there's just a lot in that painting. And then I looked again at Hildegard of Bingen's painting of the Antichrist in the 12th century. And her painting is extremely stark and stunning. And it draws on apocalyptic imagery from the Book of Revelation. And it shows patriarchy as being at the center of things, of the darkness, the unraveling. She demonstrates the unraveling of order that's going on. And she has animals that represent greed and that represent warlikeness and that represent envy. They're undoing the ropes of society. And she comments on it, talks about the role of injustice and all this. So these are two powerful statements from our history, our Christian history, about evil. And what I like about both of them is they don't hold back. That they're stark, they're in your face, just like the Book of Apocalypse is, and the Book of Daniel is. And there's so much cover-up, there's so much denial, there's so much yes, but in the media and in religious journals. I mean, I found after the book came out, the so-called religious journals were afraid to touch my book. They don't want to talk about evil. You see, the church has put so much energy in talking about sin that they haven't even dropped the language for talking about evil. And there's a difference between sin and evil, and I really learned it from my Lakota friend, Buck Ghost Horse. He said to me, in our tradition, fear is a door in the heart that lets evil spirits in. So all real prayer is strengthening your heart so that evil spirits stay outside that door. And in one of my books, a major book on evil, I compare the seven capital sins of the West to the seven chakras of the East. So each of our chakras is a door, like that fourth chakra that Marcos was talking about, the heart chakra. And we have to realize, you know, the door, we have to be perceptive about when to open the door and for whom to open the door, but we also have to be strong, as Buck says, to resist letting fear and evil spirits. That's the point, that evil is something spiritual. The opposite of evil is not good. The opposite of good is bad. The opposite of evil is the sacred. And evil operates at the level of the sacred. It operates in a world of spirit. So I think that evil spirits are involved in the takeover of the Supreme Court by Opus Dei and Leonardo Leo and these far-right fascist Roman Catholics. And I think evil is involved, obviously, in this whole mega movement. And Opus Dei is very evident in that movement. And other far-right movements, both evangelical and Catholic. So these forces are very big, and evil is smart, it's intelligent, it goes where the power is, and it plans way ahead. This movement that is culminating in Trump, he didn't begin it. It began at least 40 years ago, and it's gathered kind of like a storm or something. Like you said, it's gathered racism. It's gathered revenge and resentment. And all this is gathered in the storm and the dust of it all. But they are prepared, as we know. And, of course, I have a whole chapter on Project 2025 in my book. I point out 18 points there within it that are utterly anti-Christ. So I have a chapter on Christ and what he stood for, like your wonderful book on the Beatitudes. And then the next chapter is Antichrist. Antichrist, the opposite of Christ. So, you know, that's not hard to get. So our ancestors have language to talk about evil. But our media is, even our so-called religious media, is afraid to talk about evil. They want to talk about sin. They don't want to talk about evil.
Right. Well, gosh, thank you, Matthew. And so much to reflect on there. And nobody talks about evil. But I'm thinking so much as you're speaking of my friends, the Jesuit martyrs from El Salvador, remember, who were killed in 1989, they talked about evil when I was with them, and they were naming the death squads as evil. And we don't do that here. And I remember, just to reflect with you a little bit about all this before I move on, growing up, my teachers, you know, was Daniel Berrigan. The first time I met him 45 years ago, he said, what we're up against is not just a person, but he was paraphrasing St. Paul and the principalities. And he said, it's death. Anything that brings death, the methodology of death is what, because Christ came that we might have life and the fullness of life. And when I see what's going on now, just the slashing of, it's hard to take in the billions and billions of aid that went to Africa and Latin America is gone. And then yesterday, as we're recording this, just the, he's over there just flaunting over the incredible greed of the trillionaires in Saudi Arabia. There's no, it's
drooling for his own airplane.
Yeah, it's but it's so far beyond him or narcissism. It's just, as you're saying, that it's the spread of real evil, and we're all getting co-opted by it. And so whereas Christ was calling us to spread goodness, Dr. King even talked about organized goodness and organized love and the fullness of life for every human being.
Couldn't agree more about St. Paul, the battle is against powers and principalities. Well, those are names for angels, you know, for spirits, bad spirits. That was what Bocquist was saying, you know, that the battle is not just against the human, but there are these forces. And I say that, you know, you don't have to use names Satan or Beelzebub or Lucifer, but the words racism and sexism and unbridled capitalism, which is unbridled greed. All these are idols. All these are gods and goddesses, and angels, bad angels. They're spirits, evil spirits. And you know they're spirit because they come back every generation. You know, humans die off. And you know, we had a civil rights law and movement there 60 years ago, but it's gradually been undone by the current Supreme Court and so forth. So you realize, yeah, we are swimming in a world that's bigger than just the human when you're talking about evil. And that is part of the Jesus story, that he took on these forces and promised that he would, you know, continue to do so, that we have support from many places, our ancestors, the community of saints, but also from the world of spirit, the Holy Spirit, and these prophetic people, like you mentioned, the Jesuit martyrs, and that made me, in Central America, it made me think of my former student who was martyred in the Amazon, Dorothy Stang, you know, on behalf of defending the peasants there and the local farmers and, of course, the rainforest.
Yeah.
And beautiful people. Bishop Casagalaga, the year of silence, they went and visited him, a real saint.
Yeah, I knew him too.
Great Amazon.
Yeah,
great man, and he was silenced by the Vatican.
Yeah,
and so in our lifetime, in my lifetime, I think there've been more martyrs in South America in Central America than there were in the first century of the Christian church in Rome. And we don't look at it that way, but I think they actually counted them. Because, you know, tens of thousands of people have been martyred in the base communities and liberation theology movements of South America. And they have moved things from a dominant dictatorial political scene to a quest for a democratic scene in most places. So, you know, there's been some progress and some redemption that's been going on, but also so much opposition, including in the churches.
So, Matthew, you've spent your life, it seems to me, among other ways to frame it, writing about and teaching about spirituality. And what we're another way to put what we're talking about are all the false spiritualities of violence and injustice and war and racism, the false theologies and the idols, the false gods. So what we need is the true spirituality, I suppose. I don't know how to put it, else to put it, but I would like you, if you could just say a little bit about spirituality in general that would be authentic of the gospel. For me, that would mean, how can people live a spirituality of peace and love, universal love? But that's why I keep going back to Dr. King's word, nonviolence, which means you can't have anything to do with violence or killing or death. So maybe even a spirituality of nonviolence.
Yeah, well, I also like your quote from your mentor, Dan Berrigan, about death. That death is a synonym for evil.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
You know, one of the best books ever read on evil was by Eric Fromm, and of course he comes out of the Holocaust, being Jewish, and he says that necrophilia grows when biophilia is stunted. Necrophilia grows and biophilia is stunted. So necrophilia is this love of death, just what Berrigan knew for you when you were a young man. And but the opposite, or the medicine, is biophilia, the love of life. And as you cited the passage from John, you know, I come to you that you have life and have it in abundance. Well, that's biophilia. So we need a spirituality of biophilia.
Yes.
What the mystics call the via positiva, falling in love with life. The last chapter in my Trump and Mega Movement as Antichrist book, the title of it is called Be Like a Camel, because I think we're living through a dark night of our species because of global warming that we've brought about. We don't know but we do know we're facing our extinction. And 100 million other species are facing their extinction. And so there's the dark night of our species, and there's the dark night of society, and the dark night of our souls. It all goes together. And how do we get through this dark night, which is a desert, like a camel? The camel goes to the watering hole before crossing the desert and fills up this big hump of his because he knows that he's going to get dry. So that's what we have to do. That's what real spirituality is. It's practical. It's keeping your energy intact and your values grounded. And it is filling up on biophilia, because all the forces of necrophilia within us and within society and our structures, you know, they're going to be raining down on us. That's what people are feeling today. And so there are ways to defend yourself. And one is to love life in an ever greater tasting of it. As we get on this journey, and of course we're in the journey together, this is not a single camel, it's a caravan of camels. Those of us who are trying to cross this desert and speak out and resist nonviolently, which sometimes will mean going to jail and so forth, and speak out. And all these efforts to say no, which is the prophetic word, we have to say no, but we also have to say yes and never take away. And the yes is that mystical acceptance of the beauty of life, of the goodness that you talked about earlier. And that's my term, original blessing, that Genesis 1 is a cosmology of how good the world is and how very good, even when humans come on board, the whole circle of creation is very good. And so that's what we have to drink in and fill up on. That's spiritual practice for today. And because we're up against these necrophiliac forces of greed and violence and envy and all these other forces that spread fear and spread darkness. And it's one reason I'm writing about John the Cross now, because he himself was an absolute activist. That's what got him in trouble. People separate him and they think he's talking this stuff about contemplation, but his real transformation was in prison when he was being tortured by his own paralyzed brothers on a daily basis. And he almost died, and then he wrote poetry there in his head because he didn't have the paper. But and the poetry was all about love. It was all about, he was reproducing the Song of Songs. It was about falling in love with creation and seeking his beloved in creation. And that's what we have to realize. This 13.8 billion years that have brought us forward, brought this amazing Earth here, it's in jeopardy right now because of our species. And it should be able to unite all of our species, all of our countries, and all of our ideologies should be able to unite around gratitude for our existence. And that's biophilia.
That's wonderful, Matthew. When you write this book, do you have a copy? Or I would encourage you to get a copy of The Dark Night of Resistance by Dan Berrigan. When he went underground in 1970, and for months the FBI was chasing after him, he wrote a book about the experience while underground. And he used John of the Cross. And great. So he's talking about being underground and resisting the Vietnam War with texts from St. John of the Cross, as only Dan could do.
And it's, thanks for reminding me of that.
Yeah, and I think it's the most creative writing Dan ever did, because from John of the Cross, he says, well, in the end, to be human is to resist. And resistance is a mystical contemplative practice. Isn't that great? It's not what you would have expected, not what anybody expected Dan Berrigan to write. But I want to move on and ask you about...
Another way of saying that is to be human is to have a conscience.
Yeah, but a conscience demands action.
It tells you to
action.
Say no. It tells you to resist.
Yeah, say yes and no and no. I want to ask you about Jesus, Matthew. As you know, I've sort of put my chips on talking about the nonviolence of Jesus as... Even in light of all the issues, or whatever you call them, maybe they're not issues, every war, I keep, as a way of responding and dealing with audiences, I say, well, what would Jesus have us to do? But Gandhi and Dr. King said Jesus was the most nonviolent person who ever lived. And if we want to follow him, we have to be nonviolent. So that's why I keep talking about the nonviolent Jesus. I just wanted to ask you to reflect with me on your take on Jesus these days, or even the nonviolence of Jesus. And I was thinking about this driving over here this morning and thought, well, that's what a thing to ask you, Matthew. But, you know, it's a great question. What are you thinking about Jesus these days?
Of course it is. Yeah. Well, first, I want to thank you for your life's work and your writing and your recent book on the Beatitudes of Jesus, which you gifted me with an advanced manuscript of that. Because, you know, in fact, Thomas Aquinas says the essence of Christianity is found in the Beatitudes.
Wow. I didn't know he said that.
Yeah, that's what you've been working on. So Beatitudes represent Jesus' teaching, of course. And I think you've done a very fresh remake of the Beatitudes. I myself am teaching a 24-week course coming up on Shift Network, which is about Christianity 2.0. 2.0, where I'm trying to go back to Jesus, and but also to the mystics and prophets who interpreted him over the last 2,000 years, including, you know, people like Thomas Merton and there, it was, of course, Berrigan's mentor and so forth, who saw what you're seeing, that especially in modern times of this horrible warfare we've invented, that, you know, nonviolence, and of course King and Gandhi, that nonviolence is the only way to get there. But the nonviolence, of course, where does it begin? It begins with ourselves. It's what even Muhammad said about the jihad, that the primary jihad is that inside our own souls. So we're all carrying the seeds, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, the seeds of violence and the seeds of nonviolence. And, you know, we have to be aware of that. And then we have to say, how do we contribute to nurturing the seeds of nonviolence versus the seeds of violence? And that does not mean we don't have moral outrage. In fact, we have to pay attention to our anger. Aquinas says nothing great happens without anger. So anger is that fire that in the belly, the moral outrage that said, this is, well, outrageous. I have to say no. I have to stand up and say no. And some people, I think, misinterpret nonviolence. And I think the dualistic tradition, like of Augustine, says that only anger is a sin. No, anger is not a sin. Violence is the sin. Violence is anger taken to the point where it's destroying others or oneself. Whereas we have to, as Mr. Eckhart says, put a bridle on your passion of anger. And what's a bridle? And he says the bridle is a bridle of love. And so a bridle is a stirring instrument for a horse, you know. So think of anger as a stallion we all have inside of us. So are we going to lock it up in the barn and call that nonviolence? No. You get the stallion out. You learn to ride it, but you learn to steer it, that bridle of love, so that you're in charge of your anger, and the anger is not running you or your community or your government, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the whole language of nonviolence, we have to apply it to ourselves as well as to our structures, because that's where it begins, where people are full of resentment, where they're full of outrage, and that you want to project it onto others, often because they're ignorant of themselves, that where it's coming from in their own wounds, in their own story, in their own suffering, in their own abuse. That all that has to be mined, all that has to be, melted by love and by wisdom and by awareness. So I think a big bag opens up when you use the words violence and nonviolence. It's not just our structures, it's not just bad people we can name, but its seeds are in all of us, as Thich Nhat Hanh says. And that's where some of the deep digging has to happen.
Oh, that's great, Matthew. When you say, we have to say no to these things and yes to the good things of life, really, I think I hear you saying that as we reflect on spirituality, an authentic spirituality in a culture with so much evil and death happening, We're talking about being a prophetic people. So I wanted to ask you about that. And that's what happened in Latin America. And our own teachers, Dr. King, Dorothy Day, Merton, the Barrickans, were, I think, really great prophets. And there are prophets out there today. But maybe we could say that together we are called to be prophetic communities and prophetic movements. That's what, to me, the way I'm looking at, what I'm looking for in the church is to be prophetic people, communities, movements that speak out against not just the loss of democracy, but the threat of total war and environmental destruction. Tell me about that. I don't even know how to ask. What would a prophetic church look like? How can we teach each other, like a whole new school of the prophets, like they had in the scriptures, encourage people to be a prophetic people?
Yeah, well, great question. And, of course, as far as prophet goes, Rabbi Heschel says the primary work of the prophet is to interfere.
Is what?
And Rabbi Heschel, who wrote the great volume on the prophet and also walked it and lived it, he says the primary work of the prophet is to interfere.
To interfere. Wow.
Interfere, yeah. And that's saying no. But that's what we're called to do, to interfere. But again, to interfere, you have to be in love. So there's a dialectic between the mystic is a lover in us, and the prophet is the defender of what we cherish, of who is willing to interfere when what we love is endangered. For example, Mother Earth and so many other creatures, but also one another. And like you're saying, yeah, I think the real church is people, and Vatican II got on board with that. It's people who are doing their best to live out the yes in life, the mystic in them, the lover in them, and the prophet, the no, and the one who interferes. And another word for prophet is warrior, actually, like you get in the Christmas Midnight Mass from the Book of Wisdom, you know, that the stern warrior leapt from the heavens to the doomed land. And that's just a beautiful passage. I love John the Cross uses it too. But it names the incarnation, the entrance of the divine into the struggles, the doomed land, the doomed history of our species. So all these wonderful images we have and stories we have and symbols and archetypes we have to build up our own strength and to find allies, as you say. I couldn't agree more that being a prophet today is not about being someone with a long beard and a stern face. It's finding others who are engaged in saying no, in resisting, and not putting limits on it. That is to say, imagination. I mean, there's just last night, I think it was Bruce Springsteen was yes. doing a concert in England, and he talked about this, what's going on here. And of course, music and musicians are always part of the prophetic movement. And so calling on imagination, and that's where I got hooked, if you will, or really struck by these paintings from the 16th and 12th century, because they too were dealing with evil in their time. And the two of them, Hildegard and Luca Signorelli, they put it into painting because that moves people. Of course, today we've got film, we've got video, and so many ways of art by which to move people. And being able to put it into our rituals. The ritual today has become so book-oriented. It's about finding your place on a page to read get a prayer that's read at you, or you read a prayer. No, we have to find rituals that really engage the body, that engage all seven chakras. So imagination is uplifted and juiced up so that we can leave our places of ritual to engage and have the energy, the spirit to be the prophets we're called to be and to be the mystics and lovers we're called to be. Because prophecy isn't enough. You can be a very dire person and dour person if you only ran on prophecy 24 hours ago. A day, you've got to fill up on that biophilia. You've got to fill up on the joy and the celebration, as well as on the resistance in the saying no.
Well, that's
prophets I've
great.
Known have always had good senses.
Yes, right, right. And Dan certainly did, and Joan Baez says Martin Luther King was the funniest person she ever met.
Oh, wow. I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. I never heard that. Like,
yeah.
And from Joan Baez, it's yeah. triple meaning to me.
Yeah, it. And it's heartening. And
exactly.
Tutu and Thich Nhat Hanh, who I knew, were very funny and fun people. I think that's a good note to end on. I'd love to go on more, but how about you coming on again some other day and we carry on the conversation?
Well, that would be fun. I mean, I enjoyed our conversation, of course. And
is there,
I honor your work.
Thanks, Matthew. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we end? Or any final thought to our listeners in these times?
Yeah, I think our generation has been blessed with a lot of healthy theological directions. You know, there's been a liberation theology. There's been the women's movement. There's been the Jesus Seminar, historical Jesus Quest. There's been the Aramaic Jesus coming forward. There's been creation spirituality. And there's been the nonviolent movements. And so many gifts But I think it's now time to kind of gather them all and look what's the future. And you've been talking about that, the future of a prophetic people. I'm not even sure the word church is a good word anymore. I think, but a spirituality that gathers, that's what church means, a gathering. And it means people, as Vatican II underscored. And so how can we alert the people, enliven the people, and juice the people? How can that happen? And of all generations, and let's stir up ritual, because that's historically where people have gathered, and especially oppressed people, the slaves and the Jewish people. They found so much energy, and of course, indigenous people. They find so much energy in their rituals and ceremonies, and we have to find energy there too if we're going to carry on this struggle and this understanding into Christianity 2.0 after 2,000 years. It needs, I think, a reboot.
Oh, that's great, Matthew. A beautiful note to end on. So thank you so much, Matthew Fox, for speaking with me today. Yeah, and I hear you calling us to regather all the spiritualities and all our energies and to be the prophetic people who interfere, who go forth and interfere. That's great. Thank you, friends, for listening to this Nonviolent Jesus podcast. You can hear more podcasts and find other upcoming Zoom programs at www.beatitudecenter.org. Please consider offering a donation to support this free work. And if you can, please leave some positive feedback or review at NCR or Apple or Spotify or whatever platform you use. And most of all, please help spread the word about this podcast by telling all your friends. May the God of peace bless us all. Keep on following the Nonviolent Jesus, and see you all next time.